So what's left to play for? Well, it's up to the team to show us the answer to that question on Saturday night. All that and more next on this week's episode of Michigan Podcast.
But there's going to be one team that's going to play solely as a team. No man is more important than the team. No coach is more important than the team. The team, the team, the team.
Looks deep for Anthony Gordon. Waits for it, Tim Cook.
This is no time for that. In the pocket and a sack. Tim Jameson.
Brady gets terrific.
Throws it, get it, touchdown, night again.
Schultz just before Brazil got it. And a leaping interception by Woodson.
Harbaugh back to throw over the middle. Caught by Colander at the 5 on his feet. Touchdown, Michigan.
On its way. It's good.
He's 5'7", 179 pounds, a junior at Michigan. But Jamie Morris packs a wallop, and he delivers for Bo Schembechler.
And here's your first play. Pressure coming. Second. It is Glenn Steele, number 81, who fought his way through the traffic.
Option. And Robinson calls his own number, and he's going to score. Oh, an easy touchdown for Ron Robinson and Michigan.
Winner. We're going to win the championship again because we're going to play as a team. And when we play as a team and the old season is over, you and I know it's going to be Michigan again. Michigan.
Go Blue, I'm Steve Dace. Welcome to this week's episode of Michigan Podcast. My partners over at Wolverine Digest, Michael Spath and Brandon Brown, will be joining us here a little bit later on, but let's get to it. Unhappy Valley. In many respects, Michigan lost the same type of road game they have lost over and over again in the Jim Harbaugh era. Just all in one game. We've seen them get blown out on the road and look like they're just not even a competent program. And then we've seen them battle hard and then lose the heartbreaker at the end. Unfortunately for both the team and we, the fans, both fates were suffered on Saturday night as Michigan came out. And you watch that opening play of the game and you watch Michigan players walking and strolling out on the field, you know, like it's Saturday in Central Park, Chicago. All right. And then you have to take a timeout on the first play to avoid a delay of game. You have five drops in the first half, three pre-snap penalties, an ugly interception on a screen pass by Shea Patterson. I mean, it was just a comedy of errors, and that's how you're down 21-0. But from that point on, Michigan battled valiantly. Penn State only had about 80 yards of offense in the second half. In fact, Penn State only had about 140-some-odd yards of offense on about 90% of its plays. Unfortunately, there were the other 10% when it had its other 140 yards and scored all of its touchdowns. But we're used to watching Don Brown give up big plays in big games. It's just his way, after all. So here comes the Michigan offense. Finally, we see the bubble screens stretching the field vertically and horizontally. Some explosive plays. Shea Patterson is balling his ass off. It looked like Michigan was going to pull off, as Jim Harbaugh told the ABC crew at the half, their finest hour. But in the ultimate, cruelest twist of fate, a guy who has balled his ass off all year long, and you can't say that about too many guys on Michigan's offense this year, Ronnie Bell deserved better. And yes, he's got to catch that pass at the end of the game, and he knows that. Nobody knows that more than him. That's why he was crying his eyes out afterwards. But if there was one guy on this team that didn't deserve that Jackie Smith moment, it was him. And sadly, he's the one that now has to move on from it. And in a way, it's just kind of a portrait of what this season has become so close and yet so far away. You have it in the palm of your hand to end all of these narratives hovering around the program, and then you just can't get it done. On the night Shea Patterson was finally the gunslinger from down south we thought we were getting all along, then suddenly his receivers don't catch the ball. And it's not one thing, it's another. The defense is either dominant or watching, you know, the opposing team throw the ball over their heads as their safeties continue to cover KJ Hamler in man coverage for reasons only Darth Vader knows. It's all of us so want this to work. And in many respects, we have built the program we've always wanted to have. It just lacks what we all want the most. Michigan wins everything except the games that matter most, when they matter most. Jim Harbaugh has about the hollowest 730 winning percentage you could possibly have. Still hasn't won a game as an underdog. We know all of those stats. I don't have the heart to repeat them again. We've all lived through them. This stat, I think, though, might be the most tragic in the history of Michigan football. In the first quarter on the road against ranked teams under Jim Harbaugh, if you count Penn State's second touchdown Saturday night, because it was scored on the first play of the second half when they ran out of time, or the first play of the second quarter when they ran out of time at the end of the first quarter. If you count that touchdown in the first quarter on the road against ranked teams, under Jim Harbaugh, Michigan has been outscored 70-3. 70-3. I don't even know what I can't. Good morning, Dave. I'm like a HAL 9000 trying to compute that. It goes against my programming. I don't know what to say to it. Okay. I just have to blink and, you know, move on. How is it possible a guy with a top five all-time win percentage in the NFL, which is the ultimate coach's league? It's all about coaching, prep, finding an edge on the other team. And we have come out in the first quarter of all these games and face planted. I mean, that's an extraordinary statistic when you look at what it means about the preparation from our coaches and the poise of our players. And yes, they did fight back valiantly, and I give him credit for that. But it's a little bit like when your kid comes home from a one-car accident that he caused and wants credit for rescuing himself. You know, I mean, they made this mess almost entirely themselves. And Michigan had Penn State pretty well handled on Saturday night. I mean, Michigan had over 400 yards of offense. Penn State had less than 300. Michigan nearly doubled the Nittany Lions in first downs. Yeah, Michigan kind of had, you know, they kind of had Penn State's number. It was themselves that they could not beat. Napoleon remains correct. You can't win a two-front war. And Michigan, again this season, found itself playing itself as well as the opponent. So what do we do in the aftermath? Now, this is the big debate we're having as a fan base right now. Is what we saw in the second half the turning point? And this team's going to finish strong. And, you know, this could be like a 1999. And I remember that season very well. I was there at Tom Brady's last game at the Big House against Ohio State. And that team didn't win a Big Ten championship, but it's remembered fondly as one of the best teams of the Lloyd Carr era. Finished number five. That's still the last Michigan team to finish in the top five, if you can believe that, 20 years ago. Didn't win a Big Ten championship. Did beat Notre Dame. Didn't beat Michigan State. That was Nick Saban's best Michigan State team. But did beat Ohio State. Beat Alabama in the Orange Bowl on Y2K night. Finished 10-2. That team's remembered very fondly. Could this team do that? Sure, they could. Will they? I have no idea. But that would still be a meaningful season, a memorable season, no doubt. You got the three big rivalry games at home. It means you win all three of those. You get a New Year's Six bowl game. I don't know that anybody would say that's not a terrific season. But it's up to the team to show us that, because there's just as much evidence to suggest that that wasn't a turning point, but an outlier. That was their Alamo moment. That was the moment when they realized, hey, our season is over if we lose this game. And so whatever's going on internally, whatever lack of confidence we have in the coaches or they have in us, we have to put that all behind us right now, because, you know, you want to know why there was so much bravery at the Alamo? No back door, man. It's sink or swim time. Okay. So was that what happened? Was it just they realized they finally had to put it all together and they kind of just You know, they put it all on the line, and who knows if what they have left in the tank after a dream crusher loss. There's ample evidence to suggest either one of those possibilities is on the table. But here's the thing, folks. That's not for us to answer. We don't coach the team. We don't play the games. That's for the guys in the uniforms and in the headsets to answer. And they're going to begin answering that question for us on Saturday night at home against Notre Dame. Notre Dame is really good. I don't believe they're as good as they were last year, but they're really good. Still, it's a winnable game, especially if Michigan plays like it did in the second half against Penn State for most of this one. And it's at home, where Jim Harbaugh is 27-4, as opposed to on the road, where he's 16-12. And by the way, if you take away games against Rutgers and Indiana, under Jim Harbaugh, Michigan is strictly 500 away from the big house, 12-12. So we know they're a different team at home. It's a winnable game. But it's winnable if they think it was a turning point and if they want to hang together here through the end and make a statement in these rivalry games. Then it's a winnable game. If they don't, if they feel like, hey, you know, we called our championship shot starting with the head coach at Big Ten Media Days in July and we fell short and we got nothing left in the tank, then it's not. But here's the good news. The game is a few days away. And that's when we'll get the evidence we're looking for. No need to continue to be divisive amongst ourselves and argue amongst ourselves about things that we don't control, that the team does, and they're going to answer for us anyway. And we're going to get our answer Saturday night when Notre Dame comes to the big house. Hey, I want to introduce you to a brand new partner of ours here at Michigan Podcast, Hero Soap Company. Check these guys out. Veteran-owned soap company. Sign up for a subscription and get soap delivered right to your door each and every month. Three different options, starting at just $5 a month, all the way up to the Battalion Package, or as I like to call it, the Buckeye Package. Three bars of soap each month for those Buckeye fans out there who need some extra help getting that stink off. The best part of this is Hero Soap Company donates a portion of each purchase to help veterans and active military, something all of us can unite behind, Wolverines, Buckeyes, Sparties alike. Use the promo code Michigan Podcast and get 10% off of your order. Promo code Michigan Podcast, all one word, and get high quality soap without having to go to the store. Hero Soap Company. Check them out online at herosoapcompany.com. Let freedom clean. All right, back here on Michigan Podcast, joined now by my partners over at Wolverine Digest, Brandon Brown and Michael Spath, also of WTKA in Ann Arbor. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Good to have you back this week. And Michael, I'll start this week off with you. I already talked about what we saw in the game, and now the big debate that has ensued in the aftermath is this a sign of things to come, that they finally figured it out? It clicked on offense. They quote-unquote hit their stride, and now they're going to soar down the stretch to what we saw in 1999, which was one of the, you know, favored teams of the Lloyd Carr era, even though it didn't win a Big Ten championship. Or is this did this team just decide with its back against the wall, this was the Alamo, lay it all on the line with its Big Ten title hopes, you know, on life support, and they kind of shot the proverbial wad, and that's it. They're going to shut it down for the rest of the season. I said we have no way of knowing that. We have to wait and see how the team plays on Saturday night, but what do you say?
I would agree, actually. I'm not going to make that prediction. I don't know how any of us would accurately be able to say one way or another. They looked really good in the second half. They started using their wide receivers on bubble screens, and they, you know, allowed Shea Patterson to improvise and get outside the pocket. They found a little bit of something with the running game with Zach Charbonnet, whether it was some of the read option or just getting using outside zone and getting outside the tackle box. All very good signs, but I mean, it was one game out of, it was one half out of, I'm trying to do my math in my head here, 24 halves of football or 28 halves of football so far. So I can understand why people are encouraged and optimistic, but to automatically jump, well, they've turned the corner and this is what we're going to see the rest of the season. You know, I think we have to see it this week against Notre Dame. If they go out there and play, I would even say three quarters of football offensively like they did in the second half against Penn State, that's going to be another stepping stone. But we don't know yet. We don't know yet, and nobody is going to be able to, I mean, it's all going to be guessing at this point. So I'd be as guessing as much as you would and as much as Brandon would. So I know it's kind of a crummy answer, but we're all in wait and see mode here.
So let me ask a question that might require even more guessing then. All right. For, you know, you guys do all the film study, Michael. You guys, we talk about it at Wolverine Digest. You guys talk about it on your radio show. This is not the first time we have either A, seen corners crashing on us, or B, sagging way off our receivers. Where were these bubble screens and smoke routes all year long? This isn't the first time everybody knew Shea Patterson was better outside the pocket and improvising than in a structured system. That's what was so prolific at Ole Miss, and that's what we thought we were getting when we switched to this offense. So why didn't we see this week 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5? I mean, why did we not see more of this until now? Where has this been schematically? You know, I understand, and I will defer to, you know, former coaches like Urban Meyer. Well, you know, it takes time to, you know, get your timing and rhythm down. I get that from an execution standpoint. But schematically, where's this stuff been the first month and a half of the season?
Is this for me or for Michael? Because I don't want to answer it.
All right, that's for Michael. Yes.
Steve, that's a good question. I mean, that's speed and space. That's the whole offseason narrative. That's throwing the ball to your wide receivers and allowing them to get upfield. That's utilizing your quarterback in the manner in which he is strongest. I don't know where it's been. I mean, we talked about it on the radio show on Tuesday. I mean, football is an extremely complicated game. What is taking place on any given play with 11 offensive players and 11 defensive players, the assignments they have, the terminology that's going on, is enough to leave most of us completely overwhelmed. And yet football is also an extremely simple game. If you have better athletes outside the tackle box at wide receiver than they do at defensive back, and if you have a quarterback that's comfortable throwing on the run and being outside the pocket, then you utilize those guys in that capacity. If you have a great running back, you run the football. If you have someone like, well, I'm sure we'll talk about it, Daxton Hill, and you can defend KJ Hamler with him, you use Daxton Hill. So it's a simple game, and Michigan was said it was going to be simple in the offseason, and we just didn't see it for the first six games. I don't have a great explanation for you.
So, Brandon, you don't want to answer that one, but I got a tougher question. I got a tough question set aside for you, okay? Because you cover the press conferences and the media avails for us here at Wolverine Digest. So you get a chance to look these guys in the eye during the week. I listen to I will listen at least some of it every week. I don't often get a chance to listen to like every last player interview in the locker room, all 2 hours of it. But I did stay up late to do it against Penn State because I wanted to see where the early read on this team emotionally was. Because you'll recall last week, Michael and I were discussing that we thought this team would either go 0-2 or 2-0 in this stretch because it'd be tough to pick themselves up off the mat after losing a game at Penn State for this one. And it was very clear that the message in the postgame radio show from Jim Brandstetter on down was, hey, this team played very well, and there's a lot to play for with these rivalry games, and they can get confidence from this. And they tried to tee that up for the players, and really almost without exception that I can, and I'm saying almost because maybe there was one and I just missed it, but man, it didn't seem like the players after the game were taking that bait at all. I mean, Shea Patterson was talking about crying and hugging with players and coaches afterwards like it was the end of the season. Now, that's the immediate aftermath of the game though, right? When you've just had your scrot stepped on and your heart ripped out. 48 hours later, you're there at the media avail on Monday. Did you sense more defiance? Did they have not what they said? I mean, the body motion, the eye in the tiger. You were there. You looked them in the eye. What'd you see?
I came away really kind of puzzled, to be honest. It was a strange. So we talked to Carlo Kemp, defensive captain. We talked to Ben Bredesen, offensive captain. We talked to Quiddy Pay. And it was just, it was kind of business as usual with Bredesen. He kind of said, you gotta take away some positives. You hate to lose. You got to get back out there and we'll start working. So his was kind of run of the mill, pretty basic standard stuff. He's a pretty even keel guy. I don't think he gets too up or too down. in big wins or losses. So he was kind of like what I expected. Could he pay? He was positive, but like he said, and I know you said not just in their words, but in their body language and what they looked like and how they responded as well. But he had a couple things that he said that I was like, does he know that they lost the game? Like he said one time, like, yeah, we just really wanted to go out there and make a statement. And I was like, okay, that's a weird thing to say after a loss. And then Carlo Kemp, I mean, he had some of the most, like, I almost wanted to leave. And I don't want it to sound like I'm dogging the guys for what they're saying, because they can only say so much. There's only so many words that they're going to be able to say, you know, when they get these questions thrown at them. They're not going to be super negative and throw guys under the bus. But at the same time, like, they are coming off of a loss. At the same time, they have a big game coming up against Notre Dame. Like, they're not in the easiest spot to field these questions and come out, you know, looking perfect. But Carlo Kemp said a couple things along the lines of, you know, I think somebody asked, you know, you guys are now whatever the number is against ranked teams on the road. You're 0-7 as underdog or 0-8 as underdogs. You know, how can you explain these struggles? And he said something along the lines of, yeah, I guess that's defined by what you call a struggle. You know, we're out there and it's all about how you respond. It's not so much about the outcomes or the final score. It's about how you respond. And I'm thinking, what? Like, what are you talking about? It is about, like, he just seemed like the answers were so confusing. And I'm like, if he really believes that, then, like, I just don't know what the message is before and after the game. Like, you know, it was a bizarre, like, I'm never a huge fan of press conferences. I know, like, oh, that's, you're in the right line of work then if you don't like going to press conferences. But, like, you don't ever get a ton of great stuff out of them. The coaches kind of say what they have to say. The players, same deal. But it was bizarre. It was bizarre on Monday. Like I said, Quidipe had a couple things, like they won the game. Carlo was acting like losing games is no big deal. And Bredesen was kind of somewhere in the middle. Like, it was just strange. And I don't know what that means for how they'll play against Notre Dame. I don't know if that means, you know, Bredesen and Kemp are just trying to be as absolutely positive as they can as team captains so they don't lose guys. But it was strange. And I left feeling not very good about what the rest of the season might look like, especially considering it's just kind of broken record time. Here we go again. Another big game, another loss for Michigan.
Brandon, do you think it's possible that you got mixed messages? Because they're not sure. I mean, right? We've been told all camp, all season, that, you know, there's insiders on the various message boards who go to practice, and they're like, I think Michael has had sources tell him this. We've never seen a bigger disconnect from the team we see in practice to the one we see on the field, right? And then all of a sudden, when it seemed like the entire season was going to go in the toilet, all right, and we were going to become a Paul Feinbaum meme, all of a sudden the team we thought we were going to see all year shows up from about the 10-minute mark of the third quarter for the rest of the game. And do you think it's possible that they're not sure, that they're kind of like, I guess we'll find out what, you know, they can't answer our question because they don't know. And they're going to find out whenever, like everybody else does, when Saturday night arrives, meaning that is this a young man's way of saying, yeah, you know, we actually played really well, I better than I thought, and we still lost, and I'm not really sure what to do with that. And I guess we find out when we play another really good team on Saturday.
I don't think it's a possibility. I think it's a certainty. How can they? I mean, they're saying what they think they should say. I'm sure they're busting their tails in practice. They don't want to go out and lose these games. I mean, like, they're of course going to give everything they have, and they're going to play hard in these big games, and they want to come out winning more than the fans do. I mean, they're the ones in the trenches. They're the ones giving the blood, sweat, and tears. Like, of course they want to win the games. But I mean, yeah, I think you hit it right on the head. Like, you know, Quidipe will say something like, you know, I think the defense showed that we can play our ball and the offense showed that they can do stuff too. He almost was kind of saying like, see, we've been telling you that the offense was pretty good. It just took seven games to get there. That's kind of like what you read between the lines a little bit, and that's what it sounded like. But then, you know, like, where was it in the first half? Why are you down 21-0? Why aren't you using guys in the way that Michael talked about a couple minutes ago? Like, it's just really puzzling. And it's been that way all year, and that's why, you know, this game against Notre Dame, I'm not real optimistic. And you talked about, you know, picking yourself up off the mat after a tough loss, and now the playoff thing is completely hopeless. The Big Ten title thing is just about as hopeless. And they're in a tough spot. They're in a tough spot heading down the stretch with three tough games left against Notre Dame, Michigan State, and Ohio State. And Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what you expect them to say. And like I said, you can go back and forth on what they say and what they really mean and how they look and how they really feel. It's really hard to try to decipher that. And at the end of the day, like, here we are again, 7 weeks in, and we still don't really know exactly what's going to show up on Saturday against Notre Dame because we just haven't seen it enough. I mean, cool. I'm glad it looks like it did against Penn State for, you know, like you said, 25 minutes, but that's 25 minutes out of a lot over the course of the season so far.
Michael, as you have broken this game down and the emotion as a fan subsides and the analytical hat comes back on and you start looking for clues about what this portends for the rest of this season, what is still kind of stuck in your craw that bothers you? And I'll give you an example from my end just to kind of give you an idea of the context of the question. It's the wide receiver drops for me. And it's not the one for Ronnie Bell at the end. I mean, I can think of one or two guys in this team who deserved that drop a lot more than Ronnie Bell, if you know what I'm saying. All right? I mean, that guy's out there balling his ass off all year long. And there's not a lot of guys on that side of the ball we can frankly say that about. He deserved better from the football gods in the universe than that. He did not deserve that drop. There's maybe another wide receiver who's out there liking tweets, dogging the program by transfers today. He maybe deserved a drop like that a little bit more to humble him in life. But that's the thing, though, that bothered me is we finally had an offensive line that looked like the unit we thought we were going to see all year. We finally have our gunslinger quarterback just kind of letting it hang out. And now we can't catch the ball with this star-studded recruiting unit. That's the thing analytically that has stuck in my craw. What about you?
Yeah, I think for me what stands out is a number of head-scratching coaching decisions that whether it's play calling or personnel or decisions to go forward at certain times that just I don't think those go away. So, you know, first half, third and one, they go for it on the other side of the 50. The first quarter, 0-0, it's a chance to make a statement. They get denied. They decide to punt the football. The next thing you know, they're down 7-0. The next thing you know, they're down 14-0. And so that opportunity to make a statement, the statement they made is, hey, we're not tough enough. We're not going to take it to you. We're going to play a field position defensive game and hope that turns out to be the difference. Late in the first half, decide not to go for it on fourth and six, instead kick a 58-yard field goal with the second kicker who doesn't have as big of a leg as the other kicker. And you're just kind of like, you know, the chances of you kicking a 58-yarder with a guy whose maximum field goal in his career so far, I think, is a 49-yarder versus going for it on fourth and six at the, you know, the Penn State 41-yard line with minimal time left in the first half, that's a head scratcher to me. You know, the decision to have safeties defend KJ Hamler in the slot is a head scratcher to me. And then, you know, Michigan has a chance to win the game or tie the game. They're at, I think, the 6-yard line. You know, we were talking to Devin Gardner on our show on Monday about this, and I said, Devin, so, you know, you get to that point, you got to try to tie the game. What are you thinking there? And he's like, what you're thinking is there's four plays in the red zone that as an offense, you say to yourself, these are the best four plays that we have as an offense to score the touchdown. And those four plays, even if they don't make any like rhythmic sense, like even if one doesn't play off the other, but they're the best four plays, that's what you run to try to score a touchdown. And he's like, because if you're at the 20-yard line, you know, you can try to pick up yards for a first down, but like really you're not, the goal is not to get, you know, pick up 3 yards on this one and 3 yards on the next one and then get a first down or then get the touchdown on the third play. Like you're at the 6 or 7 yard line. You just try to score on all four plays. And the first play is an inside zone read that gets nothing. Mm-hmm. And the second play is a play that we hadn't seen all game. It's a direct, you know, it's a direct quarterback toss sweep to the left that Devin said, look, I mean, he's like, we all like Shea, but he's not Denard Robinson. He's not going to get around the edge against this defense. And in fact, it went for 1 yard on the play. And now you're at third down and you're still at the 6 yard line and you've achieved nothing in the first two plays. And so like head scratcher things like that to me is as much as people can argue about how in key moments, the players just don't make the big play. In a lot of key moments, the coaches don't make the key coaching decision. And I think that'll continue to plague them going forward.
So let's talk some big picture. It's a little too early to do it yet because we've got this stretch of rivalry games beginning with Saturday that will give us a clearer picture. But when you talk some big picture, you know, I went and researched this yesterday, guys. There's not, you know, if Harbaugh is back next year for year six, he's going to try to do something that no other current college football coach has been able to do. There is not another Power Five coach in the country who won his first conference title at his current school after year five. Mm-hmm. Not another one. So to put that in perspective, there are, if you count Notre Dame in there, there's 64, or maybe it's 65, Power Five jobs. None of those coaches won their first conference title after year five. None of them did. In fact, the closest is Dabo at Clemson. He won his first, though, after year four. So, you know, we always get these Harbaugh-Dabo comparisons. I heard Doug Karsh on a podcast this week making the same comparison and talking about, you know, I know Michigan fans want this done overnight. It's year bleeping five. But, you know, we're a year past the Dabo comparison now, let alone trying to do this in year six. And I know fans think that, you know, well, we're recruiting well, you know, we're winning 8, 9, 10 games a year. Let's just keep doing that and taking a bite out of the apple. I wonder, and this would be more your previous experience, Brandon, can you keep recruiting at that pace, though? Do recruits say, hey, you know, yes, you're putting a lot of guys in the NFL, but I can go to the NFL and go win 8, 9, 10, or win, you know, 10, 11, 12 games somewhere else. Meaning, can Michigan sustain, in your view, based on what you know of the past, can a program sustain recruiting somewhere around the 8 to 15 range on an annual basis for into perpetuity without winning championships? Do you think you can do that with a powerful brand name like Michigan? I don't know, Brandon, I'm asking. Because I think that's part of the puzzle here for Michigan's long term. If the answer to that is yes, then by law, then you keep just trying to do this over and over again and hope one of these years the schedule bounces and you're healthy and another team isn't, and you take advantage of that because you can keep replenishing talent. But I think that's kind of the missing link, Brandon. Do you think you can keep doing that in today's recruiting environment? I don't know the answer, I'm asking.
You know, I think you probably can. At a place like Michigan, I think you can probably, if you're asking between the number 8 and number 15 or 20 class in the country, which is about where Clemson has recruited, which is about where LSU has recruited, they've been a little higher than that. Bama, Clemson, Georgia, Ohio State is, you know, kind of in a category of their own. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the other teams that are doing well right now, the LSUs of the world, Auburn, I mentioned Clemson. Trying to think of who else is Notre Dame. I mean, those programs are recruiting right around there. And I think Michigan is in that ballpark. I mean, you know, it certainly would make it, I think you would certainly see an uptick if Michigan could have won at Penn State and knock off Ohio State and play for a Big Ten title and be in the playoff discussion. I think you'd see an uptick, but at a place like Michigan with a name head coach like Jim Harbaugh and all the resources and the insane weight room and facilities that they just built and that 110,000 stadium right there and the brand and the network, I still think that they're going to recruit about that well. I really do. And that's, you know, that's kind of a blessing and a curse based on the way you worded the question to me. I mean, I don't really think that the recruiting takes a huge hit unless the program or the coaching staff takes a huge hit, like we saw with Brady Hoke at the end of his tenure, where you're going 5-7 and you're on the really, really hot seat and it's like a foregone conclusion that you're going to be fired. That's not happening with Jim Harbaugh. He is still winning 8, 9, 10 games and playing in pretty decent bowl games and still do. I mean, so I'm trying to think of the right word to use. Fortunately or unfortunately, mm-hmm. I don't think the recruiting dips much further than that. I really don't. I think it finishes somewhere in the 8 to 20 range on any given year with a guy like Jim Harbaugh doing it. And the rest of his staff is pretty darn good at recruiting.
Michael, do you agree that maybe this is, if you're Ward Manuel, and you can't, there's some things you can't control, like you get up one morning and John Beilein says, I'm going to the Cleveland Cavaliers, okay? And similar here, you get up one morning and Jim Harbaugh says, you know what, man, I'm going to take over the Cleveland Browns because they've got a roster ready to win. You can't control that. Okay. So we're not talking about that. I'm talking about the things you can control. And because Michigan's in the ultimate, there's not been a college football program in recent memory in the no man's land Michigan is in right now. Okay. Where you're winning 75% of your games and not winning anything significant to go along with that. No one else at this level has been in that sort of zone in recent memory, and especially certainly not in the playoff era. And so if you're Ward Manuel, isn't that probably, because anytime you make a coaching change, there's risk with the hiring of another person. So isn't that the risk assessment you're doing? You're wondering, I've got a clean program. We're filling the stadium. We're the second most lucrative program in the country with Forbes, according to Forbes. So what I need to know is, can this model sustain itself in the hopes that one of these years we crack the code? Because that's to me the question. Do you reach a point of diminishing returns where you can't recruit in that 8 to 20 range anymore because folks have figured out that your program never takes the next step? Isn't that really the component that you're trying to assess if you're Ward Manuel?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I kind of, you know, agree with Brandon. I don't think that Michigan, if they go 9-3 or 10-2 or even 8-4 consistently, I don't see Michigan falling out of the top 20 in recruiting. Like I think whether it's Jim Harbaugh or another football coach who's not named Rich Rodriguez, I mean, with the resources that University of Michigan has and its tradition and its status nationally, I mean, I think you could continue to recruit there regardless of whether you win championships or not. I think ultimately the question is whether or not Ward Manuel, and I don't even think it's, I think Ward has to ask himself, like, really gut check, honest with himself, because I know he believes in this current coaching staff and what the future is. But what we're all kind of wondering, we're all kind of asking is if 10 wins is the type of ceiling with this program and you're not competing for a championship on a regular basis. And if that's the case, is that good enough for Michigan? Is that good enough for the fans, the alumni, the big donors for the athletic department? Is if you're competing for a championship once out of every 10 years and the other years you're 8, 9, 10 wins, but you're not in Indianapolis. Is that good enough? Is that enough for you in order to stay with the status quo? For me, honestly, that's not really what I was expecting. I think in the Big Ten, not asking you to win a national championship against the likes of Alabama and Clemson and you know, some of the SEC schools. But for me, like, if you're going to brag about being the program with more Big Ten titles than anybody else in a conference, mm-hmm. then competing for a Big Ten, like going to Indianapolis and winning a Big Ten title once every 10 years, is really not what you should be hanging your hat on. Not what you should be saying, well, that's good enough for us. So there's a lot of hard questions coming forward. I mean, we'll see how the rest of the season plays out, but if they lose to Ohio State, like most are expecting them to, and they go 9-3 this year, and you look at the Harbaugh era after five seasons, and he's 0-5 against Ohio State, and has never been to a Big Ten championship, and 9-10 wins is kind of the ceiling. I mean, how long do you keep going with that before you say, like, well, that's enough for us? Is it year 7? Is it year 8? What if we're 9 years into the tenure and still hasn't been to Indianapolis? Is that when you cut ties? I mean, I don't know the answer to that question for Ward Manuel. I think each individual fan is asking themselves that question right now.
Is it just as simple, you know, for this season, and we'll end on this one for both of you. Brandon, I'll start with you. For this season, is it just as simple as it's really not even about what the record is right now? And really doesn't matter if you're in the Citrus Bowl or the Music City Bowl. Okay. It's really about beat Ohio State, or this season is a loss. Is it that simple? Is it about that more than the actual record now, Brandon? Your thoughts?
I mean, man, I mean, they have two losses. You can't fix those two. They're already there. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess that's all there is left. I mean, Notre Dame, you know, very comparable program to Michigan in a lot of ways. So you'd like to win that one, obviously, at home. I mean, Michigan State, I mean, early, you know, before the year started, Michigan State just looked like they weren't going to be that good. Their offense was terrible. We knew their defense would be good. But now with Michigan's offense being as suspect as it's been, that that's nowhere near a guarantee. I mean, that's a toss-up in my eyes at this point. So, I mean, I think before you can even worry about beating rival Ohio State, like, what if Jim Harbaugh drops another one to the Spartans and he's now 2-3 against Mark D'Antonio? I mean, I just think big picture, there's not a lot left to play for. There really isn't. It's about you've got these three rivalry games, and they have to be your entire season. And that kind of sucks at this point. That
you don't like plucky spoiler. Plucky spoiler doesn't do it for you like leaders and best. You prefer leaders and bust to plucky spoiler, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, I.
I'm being sarcastic, really, obviously.
No, I know. Yeah. I get it, but I never really got into the whole, like, well, at least we can spoil Ohio State season. Like, I don't know. That doesn't do a lot for me, I guess. I don't know. I mean, don't overlook Indiana.
I agree.
On the road.
Yeah.
It's just you've got three really big games left, and Michigan needs to win all three. But I don't see how that happens, especially Ohio State looming at the end of the year. They look absolutely unstoppable.
Michael, same question to you. I mean, you're looking for progress here in year five, and the last thing left for this team to do was beat Ohio State and get to the Big Ten championship game. Looks like that last one not happening. But is it more important to go 7-5 and beat Ohio State, or go 9-3 and not win that game? That's one way, I guess, I'm looking at it. What do you think?
Well, if they go 9-3, don't win that game, then I wouldn't call that a good season. I mean, even if they beat Notre Dame, I don't know. They got to beat Ohio State, just flat out. I mean, they have to beat Ohio State. That's what the season comes down to. I don't give a damn about the rest of the games. They have to beat Ohio State. Now, if they lose, if they go 1-4 in their next five games, no one's going to be happy. I get that. But this whole season boils down right now to one game, because you're not going to Indy, and you're not playing for a Big Ten championship, and you're not going to the college football playoff. And if all you have to hang your hat on at the end of the season is you beat Michigan State, you didn't do anything, nothing at all. So now the whole thing comes down to beating Ohio State at this point. Can they take strides between now and then? Yeah, absolutely. It would be great if they beat Notre Dame this weekend. It would certainly give the fans some excitement heading into November. I mean, if they lose this game and they're heading November with three losses and essentially lost to, you know, the three best teams on their schedule, I mean, it's just going to show you how far away they are from where they want to be. But yeah, it comes down to beating Ohio State. I mean, it's the whole offseason was Urban Meyer's gone, Ryan Day is here. This is your opportunity. If you don't beat them now, it's going to be harder. It's going to be on the road next year. Ryan Day establishes momentum, creates a little bit of, you know, against Michigan, that momentum. And you're battling a bigger Goliath. So now are you waiting for a couple years down the road, but their recruiting is still way better than yours. So it all comes down to it. It all comes down to it. This season, I wouldn't call this season a success. I don't know this season could be measured as a success one way or another because they're not Indianapolis, but it'll certainly go a long way if they can beat the Buckeyes.
Great stuff, both of you. Thanks for joining us again, Brandon Brown, Michael Spath from WTKA and Ann Arbor, as well as Wolverine Digest. Thanks for joining us again this week on Michigan Podcast, guys. Take care.
Thanks.
These are exciting times at Wolverine Digest. You can see right there, we are now affiliated with Sports Illustrated. We are the official Michigan channel for SI.com. So that, of course, when you're going to be linked up with one of the great brands in all of sports, when it comes to sports media and Sports Illustrated, and you're covering one of the great brands in all of sports, the Michigan Wolverines, you need to up the ante. Now, you can see right there on our title page, myself, Michael Spath, Brandon Brown, we are bringing you loads of content each and every day. I can't even keep up all day long with the content that we are producing on a regular basis. So if you want to get all of this content, it is right now free. Everything there, all the video, audio, the podcasts, the analysis, commentary, all of it is free for you at WolverineDigest.com. This week's Twitter poll results, we asked you, what's your expectation for the rest of the Michigan football season now? The big winner, 47% of you voted 8-4. Second place, 30% of you 9-3. 14% of you say 7-5. Oh boy. And in the rear, less than 10% of you believe it's 10 or 2. By the way, analytics are only giving Michigan about a 4% chance to finish 10 and 2. So you're not that far off from what the computers and the algorithms are saying right now. Let's get to this week's question of the week along these lines. Devin Ashton says, hey, if we were to win out, what's our best possible outcome in your opinion? Well, if Michigan wins out, it's going to finish in the top 10. We've already discussed the Big Ten championship and everything. That's off the table. Okay. But if Michigan wins out, I think they're ranked somewhere around 7th or 8th, because that would also include 2 wins against top 10 teams. They then have 10 wins. They'd have played a very strong schedule. And I think you're looking at a New Year's Six Bowl for sure. And I wouldn't rule out the Rose Bowl, depending on where the eventual Big Ten champion lies in the college football playoff hierarchy. So, hey, how many of us, I mean, I predicted 10-2 at the beginning of the season. I just thought it might be a 10-2 that would get us to the Big Ten championship game. How many of us, looking at the schedule we were playing this year, would not have taken 10-2 and wins over all of those rivalry games? When every one of those rivalry games go 10-2, major bowl game, folks, I got to believe 80% of us would have taken that sight unseen. That is still on the table. Now, if you ask me what I think the odds of doing that are, not high and very low, but I don't control those odds. You know, it's up to the guys in the helmet and the headsets. They're the ones that produce the results. All we can do is react to the results that they give us. And they're going to answer those questions for us. And those answers begin on Saturday night. Thanks to all of you for tuning in here this week again on Michigan Podcast. Don't forget, give us a like, subscribe on all of the platforms you use, whether it, and a 5-star review whenever possible, whether it's YouTube here or Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, at all. Help us to spread the word about what we're doing here on Michigan Podcast by telling all of your Michigan fans, easy for me to say, Michigan friends about what we're doing here. If you're fans, I tried to say both those words at once, tell all of your Michigan friends about what we're doing here if you're fans of what we're doing here. And a special thanks, shout out to our friends at Detroit Sports Podcast who help to promote what we do here each week as well. Back at it again next week, and we're going to get more defining answers to discuss. Let's hope they're better ones than we got this time around. Until then, go Blue.